Joshua chapter 8. I think you see here with what God tells them about AI, I think you see the way that he has of recalculating his dealings with men, because by all means he wants to stay in relationship with us. That is often what you see people doing. They recalculate their position with their spouse, with their children, with their parents, because they want to remain in relationship. This happens all the time. It is actually part of relationship. And God does this. And I'll tell you what I mean. In Deuteronomy 20, he had said that they were to keep the spoil and the livestock and the plunder of cities which they fought against that were far away, but not of cities like Ai, which were part of their inheritance. When they came to Jericho, they were told to totally destroy the spoil from Jericho, and indeed from all the cities that they attacked. But of course, Achan kept some of it for himself, and all Israel suffered because of it. So now God recalculates away from what he said in Deuteronomy 20, which is that the cities in the land you are to completely destroy and not take any spoil for yourselves. Only do that if it's a very long distance, far away city outside of the land I've promised you. Well, here he changes it. You shall do to Ai and her king as you did to Jericho and her king, this is verse 2, except its spoil and its livestock you shall take for the plunder for yourselves. So he recalculated. He realized that for men in battle, when they see spoil, they consider that that is theirs, and it is just a natural human desire to grab it for yourself. And God had said, no, you mustn't do that. You must devote it to me and sacrifice it and burn it. Well, okay, he recognizes it's too much of a temptation. Okay, I'll let you away with it. Which is really how parents often treat their children, isn't it? But the point is that those who say, God doesn't change, well, he does. And you may think, yeah, Malachi 3, I am the Lord, I change not. Yeah, but go on. I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, you sons of Jacob are not consumed. The abiding, unchanging nature of God in that sense is that he shows grace and that he does not consume the sons of Jacob as he should or could. I mean, the deal was set up in the old covenant. If you do this, then such judgments will come. And if you don't do that, if you're obedient, then such blessings will come. But quite clearly, God is saying, well, okay, I will overlook that then. I'll recalculate. Okay, you did sin, but I will not destroy you. You see that very clearly in Jonah. He goes to Nineveh. In 40 days, Nineveh shall be destroyed. But it wasn't. There were no conditions given. In 40 days, it will be destroyed. But it wasn't because God was sensitive to their extent of repentance. And so he changed. He says this in Jeremiah, I speak something about a nation or an individual, and if they change in the gap between my pronouncement and fulfilling it, I will change. Even if there is no specific demand for repentance or terms and conditions sort of presented. Well, he does, however, want people to accept that this is happening. He wants them to accept that they have not behaved as they ideally should have done. And again, you see this with the legislation that's given here, the commandments given here about taking Ai. He gave them the battle strategy, which was to set an ambush. And when the people of Ai came out against them, verse 5, they were to flee before them. Well, Israel fleeing before their enemies, this is right out of the curses for disobedience. If you sin, you will flee before your enemies. And God is saying, through your recognition of that, and you consciously fleeing before your enemies, I will bring about your victory and your salvation. Because they fled before their enemies, and then when all the men of Ai had left the city, then the Israelites who were in ambush arose, entered the city, set it on fire, etc. And then came out of the city, and the men of Ai were trapped. The Israelites turned round, stopped fleeing, they fought against them, and then there were Israelites pouring out of the city of Ai, and they surrounded these guys. So the strategy that God gave them was that they had to flee before their enemies. They had to recognize that they had done wrong. And then it repeats in verse 27, only the livestock and the spoil Israel took for prey to themselves, according to the word of Yahweh, which he commanded Joshua. So this was a concession. God makes concessions. Now, it is not for us to presume upon that and to say, oh, yeah, God will cut me some slack. That would be like the spoilt child who abuses the parent and assumes that, well, Mum cut me a bit of slack on this point, so she'll cut me slack on that, and so on. There's got to be that respect in the end that God is God. And yet, on the other hand, if God should mark iniquity, well, who would stand? God does recalculate his plans and purposes, and we've discussed earlier on chapter 1 and elsewhere, Joshua, how the original intention was that you shall go from the Mediterranean to the great river, the Euphrates, all the land that the sole of Joshua's foot was to tread upon, you're going to get, and I'll give it to you. But they didn't. They were fairly satisfied just with a bit of land between the Jordan and the Mediterranean. And so, okay, when God starts to calculate their inheritances for the tribes, he takes that sort of into account and he splits the land up accordingly. Because he wants relationship. Now, this applies to us when it comes very clearly to all our relationships, but I think especially to church life. If you come into any relationship, be it with another person, be it in marriage, be it with your children, be it with your parents, be it with your church, with your workplace, and you say, look, these are my principles, these are my points, and nothing's negotiable, well, you won't have a relationship. It is as simple as that. And yet when it comes to religious stuff, people get this idea that, I don't know, this is not negotiable. We can't have her here. She's divorced and remarried, you know, and all this kind of stuff. We can't have him. We can't have them. They've got to agree, this, that, or the other. Well, if that's how you want to go through life, and if you're not going to renegotiate, well, you won't have a relationship. And it's all very well saying, but God's truth is at risk here. I agree that in personal moral terms, we ourselves should not renegotiate anything. We don't have the right to do that. God has spoken. These are his principles. It is for us personally to follow them and not seek to get around them, to renegotiate them and so forth. That's how it should be. We shouldn't seek to do that. And yet, when it comes to relationships with other people, I do not see that we have any option but to follow God's pattern here of renegotiating, even if it's against our ideal principles, position, potential, or whatever, in order to keep that relationship. And that's what God's done with you. And you also need to reflect that in how you treat other people.